Very, very eminent substitute, so be sure not to miss it. Rabbi Wein is going to come in.
Okay.
Rabbi Wein, yeah. Anyway, today's shiur is dedicated for a refuah shleima for Reyut Bat Elisheva Chava, who will be undergoing surgery, and God willing, Hashem should give her a refuah shleima min hashamayim, b'soch sharcho le'Yisrael, and all of our learning today should go towards her refuah shleima and a successful surgery. Also, obviously, our tefillahs are with the victims of that died in the tragic bus accident, and we hope that those who lost family should have much nechamot, and those who are sick or injured should also have a refuah shleima min hashamayim. Again, these things just remind us of how fragile life is. You know, a bus, you think, is one of the most safest activities that we just take for granted. We do it every single day, several times a day, and yet we know that life can be short, and the message basically is that we have to, as the saying goes, live every day as if it's our last day, because you actually never know. And therefore, you have to treat every moment of life as very, very precious and very special in that way. So you should have a handout here. And the handout basically is simply a translation, together with the Hebrew, of the last two prakim in the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. And it's interesting, the Mishneh Torah, of course, is a book of halacha, a book of law. And yet, the last two chapters, the Rambam designates a new area of law that does not appear in the Shulchan Aruch at all, and that is the laws of Mashiach. The Rambam actually tells us who Mashiach is, what is his mission, how do you know that he's Mashiach, and the like. Now again, though, I want to connect it with something we were talking about last week. So far, we've been focusing on two different stages, Olam Haba and Techiyas HaMeisim. And again, just to reiterate very briefly, the fundamental machlokes, the Rambam and the Ramban. According to the Rambam, according to Maimonides, the only thing that really matters is Olam Haba, that is the world of the soul, that when a person dies, the body disintegrates in the earth, but the spiritual essence of the person is connected with God, and depending on the level of righteousness is the degree of connectivity. And this is a pleasure that cannot be described in physical terms. The Rambam goes out of his way to make the point that every single physical description in Chazal or in the Nevi'im about su'udot, about meals, and about Leviathan, and about wine, all of this is mashal, all of this is metaphor for the exquisite spiritual pleasure of being nana miziv hashchinah. And the Rambam makes the point that even Yemot HaMashiach, the only value of Yemot HaMashiach is to create an environment where we do more mitzvot without distractions, so we eventually get more Olam Haba. In other words, Mashiach itself is a means to the end of Olam Haba, because in a world of war, in a world of distraction, in a world of persecution, it is hard to do mitzvot. And therefore, Yemot HaMashiach, where people will still die. Again, people will die in Yemot HaMashiach. And Mashiach will die in Yemot HaMashiach. But the ultimate goal is Kidei Sheyizku LiOlam Haba. Now, where does Techiyat HaMeitim fit within this scheme of things? So the Rambam says it is simply the mechanism to give prior generations who already died before Mashiach a chance to partake of the Messianic era. So at some point in Yemot HaMashiach, we don't know when, the prior generations will come back, they'll do mitzvot, they will die, and the only thing that matters really is Olam Haba. Mashiach is in order that we should merit Olam Haba, and Techiyat HaMeitim is in order that prior generations should merit this extra measure of Olam Haba. But that which is Nitzchi, that which is eternal, that which is enduring is only the Olam HaNishamot, which is the Rambam terms by the phrase, this is what the sages mean, the Rambam tells us, by the phrase Olam Haba. Again, this is kind of based on the Rambam's overall orientation, in which he did not see the body as having any enduring significance. And therefore, the Rambam could not imagine that there's some place for the body in the eternal scheme of things. This is the Shita of the Rambam. Now, Ramban takes a very, very different view. First, the Ramban does admit, of course, when a person dies, their soul goes to be with Hashem. But he does not call that Olam Haba. He calls that Gan Eden. And Gan Eden is a temporary stage. And what's going to happen is Mashiach will come, and eventually there will be, at the end of Yemot HaMashiach, there will be resurrection of the dead, which is the unification of body and soul. And that is what Olam Haba is. And that will be forever and ever and ever and ever. Meaning, according to Ramban, the Olam HaNishamot is transitional and it is called Gan Eden. Olam Haba is the Olam after Techiyat HaMetim, which will be eternal, because in the Ramban's understanding, since the body was our partner in everything good that we accomplished, the body will share with the soul in eternity of reward. Okay, and therefore, according to Ramban, Techiyat HaMetim is the final stage of eternal bliss. According to the Rambam, Techiyat HaMetim is simply something that happens during Yemot HaMashiach to enable people to keep mitzvot, and they're going to die, and the only thing that's enduring is Olam Haba. Okay, so again, definitionally, according to Rambam, Olam HaNeshamot equals Olam Haba. According to Ramban, Olam HaNeshamot is Gan Eden, and Olam Haba is the world of Techiyat HaMetim that is going to be forever and ever. I had mentioned a little bit of Akasha on the Ramban from the Shabbat davening, where we say, Ein kerkra Hashem Elokeinu b'olam hazeh. Okay, that's olam hazeh. Ein zulatcha malkeinu l'chayei ha'olam haba. Efes bildecha go'aleinu limot ha'mashiach. Ein domeh l'cha moshiyenu l'tchiyat ha'meitim. So clearly it differentiates between olam haba and tchiyat ha'meitim. And that fits the Rambam's description. It actually does not fit the Ramban's description, since the Ramban identifies Olam Haba with Techiyat HaMetim. Let me just give you two points before we get to the section that I handed out. I just want to make two preliminary points. First, whether we view it from the perspective of Rambam, that Olam Haba is Olam HaNeshamot, or whether it's Ramban, that it's Olam HaTechiyah, what is the role of non-Jews in this particular reward? Do non-Jews, so to speak, go to heaven? Do they have resurrection of the dead? So here, we do have a Gemara that the Rambam codifies, in which it declares that Chasidei Umot HaOlam Yesh Lahem Chelek LiOlam Haba, that the pious of the Gentiles have a share in the world to come, whatever your definition of Olam Haba is. And the Rambam gives us a definition. Who is a pious Umot HaOlam? It doesn't mean they have to be a saint. In fact, actually, some of the saints won't get it. But rather, the concept is they observe the seven commandments of Noah. So in a sense, they kind of get it easy. You know, we got to do 613. They have to do seven. If they keep the seven Noahide laws, they are entitled to a share in Olam Haba. But here, the Rambam lays down a very, very interesting limitation. And the question is, what is his source? Because a lot of the Noahide laws, people would keep out of a natural sense of morality. Don't kill. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. So, you know, most non-psychotic people keep those laws. But the Rambam lays down the rule that in order to qualify as Chasidei Umot HaOlam, you have to do it because you believe that Hashem commanded these as commandments. Which means, according to the Rambam, it would not be possible for an atheist to qualify as Chasidei Umot HaOlam, because by definition they do not believe there is a God that commanded the mitzvot. Now this is an interesting problem, because then you have the issue, well, atheists can do good things too. An atheist could be charitable, an atheist could be kind. And what happens to such a person? If he does not get Olam Haba, does God not reward the person for the goodness that they've done? And the short answer would be they would generally get their reward in Olam Hazeh. Or perhaps there may be the concept of Gilgal, in which the atheist gets reincarnated and gets multiple chances. We're not entirely clear of this. I do want to make one point about the atheist, though. We don't necessarily say that the atheist suffers eternal damnation. Rather, the Rambam says the following. The alternative to Olam Haba is simply oblivion, meaning not the person's going to be tortured forever and ever and ever because they didn't believe in God. It simply means that the soul does not endure, which in a way shouldn't bother the atheist, because the atheist didn't believe that the soul endures anyway. So it's important that you understand that this is not an issue of a person being perpetually tortured. It simply means their death is the end, and whatever goodness they've done, Hashem is going to compensate them by giving them some blessings in this world. It is for sure that Hashem does not deny reward for anything good that a person does. There will be some calculation that person will get a benefit from it and the like. But to be zoche to Olam Haba, the Rambam says, you have to believe that God gave the commandment. Now, it's interesting that in the commentary to Tiferes Yisrael, a 19th century commentary on the Mishnah from Rabbi Yisrael Lipschitz, he has a long arichus on goyim, non-Jews, getting a share in Olam Haba. And although he doesn't say it specifically, it seems to me that he de-emphasizes the theistic aspect of the Rambam. And he seems to say a righteous Gentile is one who has done good in the world. He doesn't even link it to the Noahide laws that much. And he gives a lot of examples. He gives the example of, can you imagine Edward Jenner, who invented the smallpox vaccine that saved thousands and thousands of lives? Shall God not give him a share in Olam Haba? And he mentions a number of non-Jews who made discoveries in medicine. Actually, it's very interesting. He brings up the smallpox vaccine, as you know. We have the major controversy these days between the pro-vaccination people, and now there's a vocal minority of anti-vaxxers, particularly in certain segments of the Orthodox community. And unfortunately, all sorts of diseases that more or less were extinct, like measles, are coming back, sometimes with serious effects. God forbid, even polio, which is absolutely much, much worse, is making a bit of a reappearance as well. I think smallpox is pretty gone, but you never know. Anything could happen. But I don't want to opine on that particular issue. But generally speaking, virtually all of the Gedolei Torah have very strongly called for vaccination. They have not been in favor of the anti-vaccination movement in that way. But be it as it may, the Tiferes Yisrael seems to emphasize the good that the Goy accomplished in the world rather than the theological basis of his belief. It's interesting that the Rambam very much links Olam Haba to the theological aspect of Emunah in Hashem as opposed to the objective good. One way or the other, though, whatever your definition, we clearly go with the principle, Chasidei Umot HaOlam, Yesh Lehem Chelek LiOlam Haba. It may not be the same as the Chelek of Am Yisrael, but even within Am Yisrael, there are going to be infinite levels of Olam Haba. In fact, it's interesting, Rav Chaim of Elazhen, the Nefesh HaChaim, I may have mentioned this, Rav Chaim of Elazhen actually says that Olam Haba is not a place, so to speak, but rather each person creates their own Olam Haba. As Olam Haba is simply the goodness that you created in the world. And that goodness that you created in the world kind of comes back and embraces you. So you can create a big home and a beautiful home, or you could create a small home that's not so comfortable? It all depends on what you create. It's as if, imagine you're sitting with an interior decorator and you're choosing the curtains and the furniture, and you're sitting with the architect, assuming you have the money for this, and you're talking about how big the house should be. You design. We design our own Olam Haba. And Gehenim is the same thing. Gehenim, which is the temporary purification station before we go to Olam Haba, which unfortunately we will have to undergo, is really simply the evil and the pain that we created. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we feel it. It comes back to us. It comes back to us. We create our Gehenim. We create our Gan Eden, our Olam Haba. And that is the meaning of the otherwise non-grammatical phrase, Kol Yisrael, Yesh Lem Chelek, La Olam Haba. Now, if Olam Haba is this place, it should actually say, Kol Yisrael, Yesh Lem Chelek, Be Olam Haba. La Olam Haba means towards. Every person has a share towards the construction of their Olam Haba. That is what Rav Chaim of Volozhin says. Now, the other thing I wanted to tell you, a very nice word from the Vilna Gaon, it's a little bit of a digression, but it does connect to resurrection of the dead. There's an interesting story in Maseches Pesachim about, you know, the Torah says a non-Jew is not allowed to eat of the Korban Pesach. That's for sure, right? A non-Jew, right? Kol ben nechor lo yochal ba. So there was a non-Jew in the town of Natsivin, which was in Bava. And he used to boast to Rabbi Yehuda that, you know, every Pesach I go to Yerushalayim for Pesach, and I join a chabura, and I eat from the Korban Pesach, and nobody stops me. Nobody even knows I'm not Jewish. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Baseret didn't know what to do, but he thought of a brilliant idea. He says, next time you go for Pesach, and they're giving out the meat of the Korban Pesach, the lamb, be sure to ask for the tail. The tail is the most delicious part of the lamb. Now, the tail is a portion that's burnt on the Mizbeach. So they're giving out the meat. The guy says, hey, I want the tail. And they say, the tail? The tail is burnt on the altar. Who told you to ask for the tail? He says, a great rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda ben Baseret. So they realize Rabbi Yehuda ben Baseret was trying to alert them that this guy is a bit suspicious. He may not be qualified. And it actually mentions they killed him. There's a whole discussion, why are they allowed to kill him? Okay, is he Chayav Misa? What is he Chayav Misa for? But okay. Now, Tosos asks an interesting question. Why didn't Rav Yehuda ben Baseret be Ola Rego? I mean, the Korban Pesach is a Chiyav. Why didn't he go to bring a Korban Pesach? What is he doing in Babylonia? What is he doing in Nitzivan? Is he not Mechuyav to go? So, Tosos answers a big Chiddush, that the only people who have to bring Korban Pesach are people who own land in Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Yehuda ben Baseret did not own land in Eretz Yisrael, therefore he was exempt from bringing the Korban Pesach. So, all right, so now the Achronim ask this kasha. We say that every Jew, if they're not descended from converts, many of us are, automatically has some chelik of Eretz Yisrael all the way back from Yehoshua ben Nun. Every Jew owns 4 amos in Eretz Yisrael. 4 cubits, you own something, right? You own something, even if you don't know where it is. So the kasha is, how can Tosfos say Rav Yehuda ben Baseret did not own land? Everybody owns land in Eretz Yisrael, 4 amos. So Tosfos, the Vilna Gaon gives an amazing teretz. If you remember, in one of the Nevuas of Yechezkel, one of the most powerful, beautiful Nevuas of Yechezkel, in the aftermath of the Chorban, Yechezkel is taken to a valley of bones, of skeletons of bones. And he prophesizes over the Atzamot HaYeveshot, over these dried bones that people think are dead, there's no hope. Yavsha Atzmoseinu, our bones have been dried up. Avda Tikvateinu, right? So the old low Avda Tikvateinu of the national anthem is taken as a response to this cry, Avda Tikvateinu. Our hope is totally lost. And the bones come alive. They get together and there's flesh and there's muscle. And they go. And this is the tremendous sign from Hashem that no matter how despondent and hopeless the situation of the Jewish people is, there is tikvah and rejuvenation. Now, there is a big machlokas. Is this something that happened or is this a dream? Meaning to say, is Hashem giving Yechezkel a prophetic vision? Or was there actually a resurrection of these people? And who were these people? So it's a machlokas in the Gemara. Some say this was a mashal, it was a parable, it was a dream. Others say there was a physical resurrection. But who were these people? So, according to one opinion in the Gemara, these were the people of Bnei Ephraim. Do you remember, there's a medrash that says that 30 years before the Exodus, the children of Ephraim left early because they thought they would be entitled to go. They were killed. They were decimated in war. And these were the Bnei Ephraim. And according to the Gemara Vayikra, they lived. They returned to Eretz. They came back to Eretz Israel with the Bayit Sheni. They lived and they died and they had children. And Rav Yehuda ben Basera got up and said, I am descended from the Mesim Shehichya Yechezkel, and these are the tefillin that I got from my great-great-great-grandfather. So now the Vilna Gaon says, it's mamash beautiful. Rav Yehuda ben Basera was descended from the Bnei Ephraim. But the Bnei Ephraim never got a share of Eretz Yisrael, because the only Jews who got a share of Eretz Yisrael in the time of Yoshua were those people who came back with Yoshua. The Bnei Ephraim did not come to Eretz Yisrael. They were killed before they got there. Therefore, Rav Yehuda ben Basera did not have any land in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Tosfos says he was exempt from the Korban Pesach. And because anyone that is descended from someone who came in the time of Yoshua will have some land in Eretz Yisrael, but someone who was killed before that point would not. This is a famous quote from the Vilna Gaon. Say again, huh? No. Only a portion of Shevet Ephraim. In other words, the Shevet Ephraim that came, they got Nachalah. But that segment that didn't come did not get any Nachalah. Only a chelik of them. Okay. So that's what the Vilna Gaon says about the Mesim Shehichya Yechezkel. Again, it's whether it's a true event or whether it's a prophetic dream, it is indeed the great message. Of hope and tikvah, hatichyenu hatzamot ha'eila, and it's something that we have to remember at all times, that even when Jewish history is at its absolute darkest, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not abandon Am Yisrael. Okay, so that was just to fill up some detail. So now we looked at Techiyat HaMeitim, we looked at Olam Haba, we will come back and look at them, but now let's look a little bit at Yemot HaMashiach. The days of Mashiach. Remember that Yemot HaMashiach is very much a this-worldly phenomenon. We're not talking about the world of the soul. It is a flesh-and-blood world. And here, as I indicated, the Rambam is one of the few codifiers who actually discusses Mashiach in the Mishneh Torah. And we'll look today at different parts of Chapter 11, Perek Yud Aleph. If you look at Halacha 1, you see in the future, I'll read the English just to make it simpler, but the Hebrew appears after the English. I don't know why they did it that way. In the future, the Messianic king will arise and renew the Davidic dynasty, restoring it to the initial sovereignty. So this establishes the idea that Mashiach will be a descendant of David HaMelech and will reestablish Malchus Beis David. That's number one. Number two, he will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And number three, he will gather the dispersed of Am Yisrael. So it turns out that Mashiach has three jobs, so to speak. One is the reestablishment of the hereditary dynasty of David HaMelech. Number two, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Now, I think we talked about this, I'm not sure. But remember this, you know, the Temple Mount people, who say we have to start building the Beis HaMikdash right now, they base their position on the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi does say that the Jewish people build a mikdash, and that brings Mashiach. And their argument is, building the mikdash is a precondition for Biat HaMashiach. The Rambam absolutely rejects that position, because the Rambam says, Lehepech, one of the messianic tasks is building the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning we are not supposed to build the Beis HaMikdash physically. We build it in our heart. But we are not supposed to build the Beis HaMikdash till Moshiach comes, because he will build the Mikdash and he will gather the dispersed of Israel. Now, this is an interesting point. Obviously, Baruch Hashem, many Jews come back to Eretz Israel before Moshiach comes. But, as we know, there are a lot of holdouts. And it says when Moshiach comes, everybody has to come here whether they like it or not. And it actually indicates some people aren't going to like it. Some people might be comfortable in Miami or L.A. or whatever it is. But Moshiach says, you got to come here. You got to come here. So that's Lekabetz Nidchei Yisrael. Nidchei Yisrael. Now then, the next thing is, in his days, the observance of all the statutes will return to their previous state. This is an extremely important line, because the Rambam is making the point that when Mashiach comes, the mitzvot of the Torah shall not be superseded or replaced, but lehepech, all of the laws of the Torah, including those that we don't keep today, are going to be reinstituted. Now, the Rambam does not get into the polemics here, but if you remember when we looked at the Ramban's disputation and other things, this was a central argument in our debate with Christianity and Islam, because Christianity and Islam also acknowledged the revelation at Mount Sinai, but they claim it was superseded by prophecies made to greater prophets, whether it's Jesus or whether it was Mohammed, and therefore the prophecy of Moshe could be replaced by later revelations. And they would point out various verses, even in Tanakh, that talk about when Mashiach comes, it will be a new world. Yeshayahu talks about Shamayim Chadashim, Eretz Chadasha. Well, we'll have to interpret what that means, but the one thing the Rambam is very, very adamant on, and indeed this is one of his 13 principles of faith, is that the Torah will not be abrogated in the Messianic era. Because the eternity of the Torah means it shall never be replaced, and therefore any prophecy that purports to replace the Torah is by definition a false prophecy, notwithstanding any miracles that the prophet can do. Because we acknowledge that even false prophets might be able to do something that looked like miracles, either by optical illusion, by magic, by hypnosis, or by the kochos of impurity that Hashem will make available to give us a nisayon. And therefore the Rambam says, prophecy is not established by miracles. And if something is defined by the Torah as untrue, then it is untrue no matter what. So we can acknowledge that Yashka walked on water or whatever they claim that he did. These things are possible. There are kochots which can enable such things. But that does not prove any type of veracity. Now, interestingly enough, this idea of what we will call the immutability of the Torah, which is a fundamental principle of Judaism, actually was raised against some biblical books, the book of Yechezkel. There were some rabbis who did not want to include the book of Yechezkel in Tanakh. They wanted to exclude it. Because at the end of the book of Yechezkel, Yechezkel has a vision. In fact, he is the most, I call him the most brick and mortar prophet, because unlike Yeshayahu, whose messianic age is filled with very general statements of love, peace, harmony, Yeshayahu talks about the good feelings and emotions. Yechezkel is very brick and mortar. He describes the Bayit Shlishi in detail. He describes Yerushalayim. He describes the Chalukat HaAretz, meaning to say he's not just talking in generalities. He is talking about very, very specific things. And he even discusses the halachot that will apply. And a number of the halachot that he describes are inconsistent with the laws of the Torah itself. For example, one statement he makes is, a Kohen can only marry the widow of a Kohen, not the widow of a Yisrael. Now that doesn't fit the Torah at all, because if you're a regular Kohen, you can marry any widow. You just can't marry a divorcee. And if you're a Kohen Gadol, you cannot marry any widow, including the widow of a Kohen. So what relevance would there ever be to such a law that a Kohen can only marry the widow of a Kohen? And there are many other instances when he lists the korbanot. You know, you really have to take a chumash and compare it verse by verse when he lists the korbanot, so they're different than the korbanot of the Torah. So Chazal said, hey, if this is a Navi that's telling us that the mitzvahs are going to change, we have to disregard it. So it mentions there was a certain rabbi, Rabbi Hanina ben Chizkiah, who locked himself in an attic with 300 barrels of oil to burn the midnight oil, and he spent many, many nights trying to figure out the resolution of all of this, until he finally figured out how to reconcile the book of Yechezkel with the Torah, and then the book of Yechezkel was admitted in the Kitzvei HaKodesh as part of Tanakh. Unfortunately, we do not have Hanina ben Chizkiah's reconciliation, and the Mefarshim go to a tremendous amount of trouble trying to figure out different possibilities. And indeed, there are some that disagree with the Rambam, and they say when Mashiach comes, mitzvot may change. Okay, that's a whole other discussion, but that's not the Rambam's position. Be it as it may, the Rambam's position is very firm that the mitzvot of the Torah are not going to change, and this the Rambam regarded as a key point in our debate against Christianity and Islam. Okay, now then the Rambam goes on and says, if you do not believe in him, or does not await his coming. So it's very interesting. Don't believe in him, says, I don't believe in Mashiach. Okay, says, I understand that that's considered to be kfira. But the next statement is very interesting. Even if I believe, but I'm not awaiting his coming, right? Look how the Rambam, well, it's not the Rambam's language, but the way the Rambam's principle was formulated. Ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima, again, it's not the Rambam's actual lashon, beviat ha-mashiach. I believe in the coming of the Anointed One. V'af al pi sheyisma meya, and even if he delays, im kol zeh achake lo b'chol yom sheyavo, I await for him eagerly every day that he should come. So it's encompassing two things, and this actually mirrors the language of the Mishnah Torah B'diyuk, that it's not just a question of believing, it's also a question of wanting and yearning. So if you don't believe or you don't await, you deny not only the statements of the prophets, because obviously the Nevi'im talk about Mashiach all the time, especially Yeshayahu, but you are also denying the Torah and Moshe. Now, here, I do want to pay attention to this a little bit. The Rambam is now making the claim, and let's see how convincing his claim is, that the concept of Mashiach is not only seen in the prophetic books, which it obviously is, there you really cannot deny it, but the Torah itself tells us about the concept of Mashiach. And therefore, the Rambam says, if you deny Mashiach, you are not only denying the prophets, you are denying Hashem's Torah. Now, let's see the proof text that the Rambam advances, because the truth of the matter is, the proof text is not as powerful as we might have hoped. The Torah testified to his coming, as Devarim Perek Lamed, Pasuk Gimel says, God will bring back your captivity and have mercy upon you. Now, since this is a pasuk, let's look at the Hebrew. If you just turn the next page, let's see the actual pasuk that he brings. This is the fourth line in the Hebrew. Do you have the Hebrew? It's just the second next page. V'shav Hashem Elokecha es shavuscha. V'shav Hashem Elokecha es shavuscha. Hashem will return back to this land all of your captivity, all of the Jews that are in the Gola. V'richa necha. And he will have compassion on you. V'shav v'kibetzcha, and he will ingather you from all of the nations. And then the next pasuk says, Im yiya nidakacha, very famous verse. Im yiya nidakacha b'kseya shamayim. If those who were cast away are at the very ends of the heaven, no matter how far they are. And by the way, this means both geographically and spiritually. No matter how far a Jew is, geographically or spiritually, what does it say? Misham yikabel. Somebody is not clear. Misham yikabel Hashem Elokecha. From there, God will gather you, and He will bring you. So, I just want to ask a very simple, naive question. How does this pasuk show there is a Mashiach? In other words, this pasuk clearly gives us a divine promise that there will be kibbutz goliot. There will be a return to Eretz Yisrael. It does not specifically say it will be done through the medium of a human king called Mashiach. So the truth of the matter is, the most you see from the Chumash, meaning this is an example where the Nevi'im are giving you details that are not directly in the Chumash. In the Chumash, there is no, at least based on this pasuk, there is actually no direct reference, till we get to the next proof the Rambam brings, there is no direct reference of a messianic figure per se, but there is a reference of, in Acharit HaYamim, there will be a kibbutz goliot, mi'arba kanfo ta'aretz. And even though it does not even say there'll be a Beis HaMikdash, but one could say that it's implicit by saying Hashem will have mercy on you, that He will restore His Shekhinah through the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why the Rambam has to add at the end, I'm going back to the translation on page 1, these explicit words of the Torah include all the statements made by all the prophets. You see what the Rambam has to be doing. Because the Rambam does say the Messianic era is in the Torah, but there are some critical details that are missing in the Torah that the Nevi'im filled in, and the Rambam says the Nevi'im are not making it up. The Nevi'im are interpreting what Hashem said in the Torah, therefore it becomes part of the Torah. Which means, in other words, the Rambam, I think, admits he does not have an ironclad textual proof from the Torah itself to the personal identity of Mashiach. Now, he then brings a second proof. Reference to Mashiach is also made in the portion of Bilam. Right? Bilam was the non-Jewish prophet who was hired to curse the Jewish people. But Hashem turned all of his curses into blessings. And at the very end, Bilam had, again, look. Let's turn to the second page for the Hebrew to look at the pasuk. Af, this is the seventh line, Af b'parshas Bilam, Nemar, there is a reference to Mashiach, V'sham niva b'shnei ha-mashichim. And Bilam's prophecies refer to two Mashiachs. Mashiach harishon shehu David, the first anointed one. This is not Mashiach ben Yosef. The Rambam does not mention Mashiach ben Yosef. We will talk about that. But the first anointed one is David HaMelech. Although Shaul was king first, but Shaul was a transitional king. The first real melech is David HaMelech, so he's called the word Mashiach Rishon. Shoshia es Yisrael miyad sarehem. He defended and saved the Jewish people from their adversaries and enemies. And then there's Mashiach Acharon, the final Mashiach. Sha'omed mi'banav, who will come from his descendants, who will also be Moshiach es Yisrael bi'acharona. Right? Now, where do you see that Bilam refers to the two Moshiachs? From a parallelism. B'sham hu omer, arenu v'lo ata. See, what the Rambam is doing is that Bilam uses a certain parallelism. He says, arenu, I see him v'lo ata, but he's not right now. Ata with an ayin. Ashurenu, I gaze v'lo karov, but it's not near. Dorach kochav mi Yaakov, a star has gone forth from Yaakov. V'kam shevet mi Israel, and a staff from Israel. U'machatz pasei Moav, he smites the corners of Moav. The karkar, and he decimates the descendants of Shes. V'haya Edom Yeresh, and the children of Esav shall be dispossessed. The Yisrael Osechoyel, and the Jewish people shall do valorously. In other words, these are couplets, two phrases. So the Rambam's interpretation of these two phrases is, first phrase, David, second phrase, Mashiach. Darach kochav mi Yaakov, the star that shall come forth, is David HaMelech. The shevet, the staff, is Mashiach. Machatz pasei Moav is David. Karkar kol b'nei sheis, Mashiach. V'hoya Edom Yeresha, that's David. V'hoya Yeresha zamelech Mashiach. So essentially, what the Rambam is doing, again, I have to say, this is not the strongest textual proof either. The Rambam is taking the poetic repetition of Bilam, and instead of using it just as a poetic repetition, the Rambam wants to say, line one is David, line two is Mashiach. Now, how do you know that? Maybe line one is David, line two is Shlomo. You know, I mean, there were other kings who, okay, Shlomo didn't wage wars, but there were other kings who did wage successful wars. In other words, to prove a final messianic redeemer from nothing more than a repetition of verses in which you say, first verse David, second verse Mashiach, is not a compelling, powerful proof. But it is important to note that the Rambam interprets Bilam's double references to Mashiach, to David HaMelech, and then to Mashiach. Now, I just want to share with you a very, very interesting thought of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, Rav Chaim Ben Attar, who takes this pasuk and offers a radically different interpretation and an amazing interpretation. The problem is, let's take the redundancy. Darach kochav mi Yaakov, a star shall emerge from Yaakov. In fact, if you recall, it was understood. In fact, it's interesting that the Chazal seems to go against the Rambam. The Rambam says, Darach kochav mi Yaakov is David HaMelech, kam shevet mi Yisrael is Mashiach. And yet Chazal seem to have used the first phrase, Darach kochav mi Yaakov, as a reference to Mashiach. If you remember, Shimon ben Koziva was successful in repelling the Romans and regaining Jewish villages, Jewish cities. And Rabbi Akiva named Shimon ben Koziva Bar Kochba, the son of the star, because he said, you are a fulfillment of Darach Kochav Miyakov. Rabbi Akiva thought Bar Kochba was the Mashiach. The Rambam says a little later on, we'll get to it, that Rabbi Akiva made a mistake. Rabbi Akiva was entitled to think Bar Kochba was Mashiach because he was successful initially in fighting the wars of Hashem and the like. But once Bar Kochba gets killed before he completes his mission, that is proof, lemafreya, retroactively, that he was not Mashiach. So no one is faulting Rabbi Akiva, but the Rambam says, if Mashiach gets killed... Now again, Mashiach, who will build the temple, will die. We're not saying Mashiach will live forever. But if a Mashiach die, if a candidate for Mashiach dies before he builds the Beis HaMikdash and before he brings the Jews back to Eretz Israel, then the Rambam says that is proof he's not Mashiach, although he still may be a righteous king of Israel. Which means the Rambam acknowledges, fascinatingly, that it is possible to restore Malchus Beis David and not have that be Mashiach. I mean, let's imagine a descendant of David HaMelech comes and he is successful in restoring the monarchy. It's a good thing, the Rambam says. He may be Kamalchei Beis David HaTzadikim, but he happens not to be the final Mashiach. And if you remember, this was the Ramban's very powerful argument why Judaism does not believe in the second coming. Yashka could not be Mashiach because he who dies, or is killed at least, before they complete their messianic mission, the Rambam says is clearly not the candidate. Maybe he could have been. If the generation would have been worthy, maybe he deserved to be Mashiach, but he was not the Mashiach because he did not complete his mission. Even though we believe in resurrection, we do not believe in the Mashiach coming back to finish what he didn't finish. Now, how that applies to Chabad, I'll leave it for another discussion. Certainly, I mean, I'll express my personal view to the extent that it's worthwhile. I mean, it's not necessarily important anyway. I have absolutely no problem that the Lubavitcher Rebbe could have been the potential Mashiach of the generation, because every generation has to have a potential Mashiach. But the fact that he died when he died means that he wasn't the Mashiach, and he could have been had the generation been different. There is no problem with that, but one who dies is not going to come back as Mashiach. First of all, once you're talking about Mashiach coming back from the dead, why not have David HaMelech? Why go with the last person, so to speak? So, be it as it may, the Bar Kokhba, I think, is the critical text over here. So again, Chabad wants to say, I mean, okay, they want to confess, they say, well, the Rambam just says if Mashiach is killed, he can't be Mashiach. But what if Mashiach dies and wasn't killed? You can fetch around with that, but Pashtus, the Rambam, and the Ramban, by the way, clearly didn't differentiate. It's true that in the Rambam, if you want to be overly literal, the Rambam's language is Mashiach Shenehereg is not Mashiach. But the Ramban in the disputation doesn't use the word Nehereg. The Ramban uses Mace. So even if you want to read this distinction in the Rambam's words, you cannot read it in the Ramban's words. But okay, but maybe Chabad say we don't follow the Ramban. Okay, yeah, I don't want to get into that particular issue. But what I want to share with you is the Or HaChaim. And the Or HaChaim is also bothered with what is the repetition. It's understood that Bilam is talking about the long-term future redemption of Am Yisrael. That's why he says, Irenu, I see it, but it's not right now. Ashurenu, I gaze, v'lo karov, it's not in the near future. There is a kochav and there's a shaven. What's the repetition? So the Rambam's interpretation is, first is David, then is Mashiach. The Or HaChaim says, the whole thing is talking about Mashiach. And here is the issue. Mashiach can come in two different ways. If the Jewish people are righteous and worthy, Mashiach will come in a supernatural, miraculous way. If we are not worthy, he will be like a poor man riding on a donkey. So says the Or HaChaim, what is the difference between the names Yaakov and the name Yisrael? Right, these are two names of Yaakov Avinu, two names for the Jewish people. Yisrael is the name of triumph and greatness. And that is the name reserved to the tzaddikim. That is the name that Yaakov was given when he triumphed over the angel of God. Yaakov is the heel, the part that's in the mud. So, and therefore Yaakov refers to the average Jew. Yisrael are the tzaddikim. Yaakov are the beinonim. So now, listen to the Or HaChaim. Darach kochav mi Yaakov. if Mashiach comes in the merit of even the average Jew, as even the average Jew does tshuva and merits Mashiach, it'll come like a star out of heaven. It'll come in a supernatural, miraculous process. Dorach kochav mi Yaakov. But come shevet mi Yisrael. But if Mashiach only comes in the merit of the tzaddikim, because the average Jew, we didn't merit it, but it came in the merit of tzaddikim, Mashiach will not come in a supernatural, miraculous way. It'll be a shevet, like an old man hobbling on a cane. Or ani, a poor man riding on a donkey, but the other analogy would be hobbling on a cane. In other words, the Aruch Chaim is telling us that the pasuk is meramez, that the tahalich of geula can come in different ways depending on the collective merit of the Jewish people. If all of the Jewish people are worthy, there will be supernatural, cataclysmic, earth-shattering events. If the Jewish people are fundamentally not worthy, but there are the tzaddikim shebedor, Mashiach will come as the culmination of a normal process. Now, the Aruch Chaim was written around 250 years ago, but this has a very, very contemporary relevance. You know, in the Tfilah L'Shlom HaMedina, some people say, some people don't, it was credited for many years to Shai Agnon. Now I think the most recent research says Rav Herzog was the primary author, etc. Shai Agnon, a famous novelist, Israeli, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature. But of the Tfilah L'Shlom HaMedina, the most controversial line, there's one, three words, Reshit Tzmichat Gulateinu. And I'm aware of Batei Knesiyot, at least in the Gola, that they say the Tfilah L'Shlom HaMedina, they say it, and they leave out those three words. Or in England, where I think they have a different version of the prayer, they also don't have a reference to Reshit Tzmichat Gulateinu. Now, what is so controversial of the notion that the Medina is the Reshit, is the beginning of redemption? What's controversial about that? Because Geula is directly connected to the messianic process. And there are those who, even if they're very, very positive towards the state of Israel, Baruch Hashem, we have a state, we'll celebrate Yom HaTzimut, we'll celebrate Yom Yerushalayim, we are grateful. But they are reluctant to say that this is part of the unfolding of Mashiach. Because, number one, so much of the Medina is not Dati, and the founding fathers and mothers, at least some of them, were anti-religious and were still in a state of war. And how can you look at this as part of the unfolding? Now, again, I'm not referring to Ricarte. I'm not referring to people who, again, I'm talking about even people who are very, very positive in terms of the Medina. They refuse to identify this as part of a messianic process. Now we know that Rav Kook, of course, died before Medinat Yisrael. But Rav Kook saw Shivat Zion, the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Kook foresaw that, you know, there was going to be a state. I mean, he understood that events were moving in that direction. And he recognized that many of the Zionist leaders were not only non-religious, but some were actually anti-religious, etc. But he basically said that Mashiach will sometimes come as a culmination of political and social and military events which are not necessarily going to be supernatural in that sense. They are miraculous on one level. They are miraculous, but they're miraculous within the confines of nature. So to say, how could this be a messianic event if the leaders are not religious? How can this be a messianic event if we still have war? How can this be a messianic event if we're still victimized by terrorism? The answer lies in the Aruch Chaim's words, that when we're a generation that is not entirely righteous, the Geula will still come, but it will come b'derech hateva. Eventually there will be the Mashiach and the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, but the precursors to that Geula will be a laborious, protracted, political and social and military struggle to bring the Jews back to Eretz Israel. And in the words of the Arachayim, therefore, you actually have the response to the anti-Zionist critique of how can this be Geula if, you know, there's so much wrong, so many problems? The answer is, that's the difference between Darach Kochav Miyakov versus Kam Shevet. Mashiach could have come through a supernatural explosion in the sky, but if not, it'll come like hobbling. We're hobbling. One step forward, two steps back, two steps forward, one step back. Meaning, it's not going to be an unbroken Hatzlecha. There are going to be Nisyonos. Nisyonos mibachutz, from the enemies that try to destroy us. Nisyonos mibifnim, in terms of our own internal disagreements. But the fact that it's not a supernatural, pure, straightforward process does not negate that it could still be part of the Tahalich Hageula. And that's why the Or HaChaim's words are really very, very, very prophetic. There's Kam, right? Darach Kochav Miyakov, Kam Shevet Miyisrael. So it's interesting, therefore, that this is a different interpretation than the Rambam, just as a matter of technicality. The Rambam learns in the couplets, Darach Kochav Miyakov is David HaMelech. Kam Shevet Mi Yisrael Mashiach. The Or HaChaim is actually saying it is two different levels of Mashiach. There is the supernatural unfolding of redemption, which is like sudden and clear and absolutely miraculous. And then there is the more gradual redemption. This is sometimes termed Geula B'Derech HaTeva, the process of redemption operating through nature. Eventually there will be the supernatural aspect of Mashiach, but it'll first have to go through Chavlei Leida, the birth pains, which are the different wars and struggles and internal and external disagreements that we have. This was the philosophy of Rav Kook, and I think to a large degree it can be seen in the Or HaChaim's very, very brief comments. Now we will discuss in 2 weeks when I come back that this also seems to be the hashkafa of the Vilna Gaon, and it is almost certain that Rav Kook was very, very strongly influenced by this, because the Vilna Gaon's Talmud wrote a sefer called Kol HaTor, and Rav Hillel of Shklov, and we will see that there the Vilna Gaon is quoted, or paraphrased, as really advocating the hashkafa of a geula through the Derech HaTeva. Okay, we'll see you in 2 weeks, and be well. We talked to Ellie Friedwald. How are you? Good to see you. Hope you're well.
Thank you.
Yeah.